This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Do we want to get rocked?
Late for your weekly dose of rock and roll. This is Get Loud with Stevie on Joy 94.9.
I have Tom Larkin from New Zealand's own Shehard on the line. Welcome to Get Loud, Tom.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. Listen, I was amazed to find out that it's the 20th anniversary of your self-titled album, which is affectionately known as the Fish Album. You've remastered and re-released it. 20 years, how does that make you feel?
It makes you feel old, but I suppose not in a negative sense. It just makes you go, wow, that's a lot of water under the bridge. And you're talking about your third album, you know what I mean? Not your first.
That's exactly right. That means that you've been plugging away at it for over 25 years. How do you feel about that album, revisiting it, and your early stuff now?
Oh, it's great because you see it as part of a canon. You look at it as the stepping stones that lead you to certain places and certain points of artistic focus. You know, over a career like that, you tend to kind of look at those albums as sketches and like snapshots of what was going on socially, personally, and musically at the one time. And it's just interesting to kind of, you know, look back and contextualize where you are now to what you were doing then and what you felt as a human and all that kind of stuff. It's amazing.
Re-listening to that album, which, to be honest, I hadn't picked it up in a little while, but I have had a re-listen, and also to Churn and Killjoy. There's a massive progression between that and your most recent album, Five Eyes, in 2014. How have you changed in terms of musically, but also how you work together as a band?
I think the biggest answer to that is that we just know ourselves so much better. So,
yeah.
But, you know, even then you can still get kind of lost in some rabbit holes. Being in a band like this is very much like a, you know, family relationship or a marriage relationship. And that narrative has a commonality throughout the whole time, but it also has, you know, it evolves as well. So how you converse, and I'm talking musically, how you converse with each other is the thing that kind of like grows. And there's the word that I would use is telepathy is the thing that develops.
Okay.
Is that the sense of not having to discuss things even less and being able to operate as, you know, one organism that is kind of self-reactive in a positive way to create.
So there's a sense of trust that develops over, well, what is a very significant period of time, really.
Yeah. That's right. The confidence, trust, confidence, and, you know, a like-mindedness.
So how does that affect the songwriting process for you guys now?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things about the songwriting process for us is that we've arrived at a point where we're creating in a way that, you know, a couple of years ago we modified our process and found it even more powerful than ever, which was to actually limit the amount of time we spent writing and limit the amount of time we were together. And when I say limit, I'm basically saying we would get together for, say, 4 weeks, but we'd only work 3 hours a day, 5 days.
Yeah.
But in that 3 hours a day, we would work very, very, very intensely and not really write to an agenda as such. We would basically jam and then record it as we were going and then pick the bits that we liked and make songs out of those jams by just highlighting the bits that we liked, and then they'd go away to get some lyrics put on them.
So does it start with the jams and the music for you guys as opposed to the lyrics?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm pretty sure it does for most people. It's pretty rare that people kind of start with lyrics and then wrap a song around it. Just because the way words flow, they need to be a component and contextualize themselves against the piece of music. And it's pretty hard to kind of write a piece of music to put it against lyrics. It's actually a much more hard kind of thing to do. Yeah.
So how does that work with something like Five Eyes, which is clearly a very political album? If you've got the music there, does it start as a kind of, I don't know, aggressive or angry sound, and you've put frustration with politics and particular situations around that?
It's about intent. The music has an intent, and the kind of approach to what we're talking about has an intent. And it usually stems from, like anything, you know, there will be a certain amount of, you know, collective bandwidth that we pick up on things and discuss and talk about and throw out and have a collective, you know, kind of belief around certain things, and that comes out in the music. And I think that what we were seeing on Five Eyes was the very many of the kind of like the ways of operating that we always took for granted as being ideal within the West, being all of a sudden compromised through a series of triggers and levers that vilified one party and allowed a certain amount of control and permission for people to remove fundamental things about society, such as the right to privacy.
Yeah.
And so the anger at how 1984, or the kind of Orwellian view of things, has actually manifested, but in a way that, let me put it like this, apparently user-friendly.
Yep.
And, you know, but still doesn't change the equation or impact on society as a whole.
I think that's an interesting way to put it, making the Orwellian lifestyle user-friendly, because I think what we've actually seen is a lot of people really accepting of what is quite invasive technology and government policy and politics. Do you still think that there is a role for music to play in raising these issues and kind of creating a bit of protest around that?
I think there always will be. I think that any kind of media where you draw attention to what's going on is important. And I think that one of the things that happens with music is that music tends to travel and broadcast, but what's happened with the lack of privacy means that, you know, people's entire lives are much more, or, you know, their full belief system and their history and their journey is now available to the public. And what that means is that we're turning into literally the concept of a global village. You know, in a village society, you would grow up and the butcher would know the time when you got into a fight with
yep.
the X person on the way home from school, and the time you stole your mum's car, but then also, you know, won a medal for running and then had a relationship with this person.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, said bad things about that. And so everyone in a small community like that tends to know, even if it's broken up, a lot of your private, you know, kind of history, because it's been played out as part of that group. Point being is that as we, you know, moved into cities, and as that's been the kind of mode of humanity's growth in these kind of big faceless metropolitan areas, that idea has fallen into the distance and privacy became the way and
yeah.
that you could operate like that. What we have now is what one would call, you know, if someone has any kind of profile, or really anyone, the online world makes everything part of a village, so that people start to know everything about you and everything that you've done and everything that you think and everything, you know, and as you change and grow as a human, it's still now kind of got a village lens to it now, and everybody's in the village.
And everybody's in the village.
Sense?
Yeah, absolutely. That makes total sense. Well, I mean, coupled with not only the global village, if you like, but the political eruption of madness that's going on at the moment in the UK, in the US, and I don't know if you're aware, we've had some issues, you know, over here as well. Is that motivating you guys to whatever it is you're going to be doing next?
Oh, you know, we're just looking at the situation, looking at it getting worse. However, it is evolutionary, and some of these things going on are reflective of exactly what I just talked about there,
yeah.
the village mentality applied to a global scale. It's like, you know, you're not from around there.
That's it.
You know, that,
suspicion.
You know, that's starting to happen as movements, and what happens is the villages are now not geological, they're ideological.
Yes.
And digital communities tend to revolve around thinking of a certain kind. And that's what you're starting to see now, is that these pockets are turning up in their global movements, but they're not necessarily attached to a place. You're just seeing the reaction show up within the context of a country. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So, you know, if you look at these kind of things like a Brexit, what you'll have is you will have a mass amount of information that is cross-border from the US through to Australia, through to New Zealand, through to Canada, or any of those things. And there will actually be a community that exists between all those countries that think or revolve around a certain way of perceiving how things are working in the world and what they're losing and what they're defending. And how it plays out is that that community expresses itself through a vote like Brexit.
Very interesting. I'd really love to continue a conversation with you on this. Is very interesting and contextual and all of that, but you are going to be in our physical geographical village very shortly with a gig at the Croxton on the 16th of July. What can unfamiliar audiences, if there are any, expect from you guys?
Unfamiliar audiences. Well, yes. I don't know if we play to unfamiliar audiences.
I don't think you do. I think at this point you've got very familiar audiences.
Yeah, I mean, I think particularly when it's, you know, our own show. But however, for the uninitiated, we are a massive, tall sounding, high energy rock band. And I think that we play better now than we ever have. I think that we have less hair than we ever did. And the jawlines are starting to become a little bit more, how would one say, negotiable, mm-hmm. is their definition. But that doesn't stop the fact that the show is killer. And it's been great to play so far. It's got a narrative that starts at the Fish album, kind of travels through a few things. And it's been great to play some of those older songs. But, you know, we're putting in some of our favourite songs from later albums as well.
Yeah, great. Sounds really good. I am going to play La La Land from the Fish album because I think it really is sound of 1996. It takes me back there anyway. Would you mind introducing it for me?
Not a problem. Hi there, Tom Larkin. Just introducing La La Land, a track we wrote about living in LA back in 1995. We were stationed there for about 5 months. Here it is.
Thanks so much, Tom. Thanks for having a chat.
No worries.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.